Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing great, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderfully, and I'm particularly happy that we have a guest joining us in the first segment of our show this week, because there's an upcoming event. On October 5th, Slow Food will host its second annual gala, and everyone who listens to this show knows that we love the organization Slow Food. Fertile Ground, celebrating our food community, will be celebrated in New York, and at that organization. The founder and president of Slow Food International, Carlo Petrini, will present the first Carlo Petrini Leadership Award to Poppy Tooker from New Orleans. And on the phone with us, we have Poppy Tooker.
Poppy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So you're getting this, the first ever Leadership Award from Slow Food USA for your work down in New Orleans in Louisiana.
Yes, that's the truth.
That's great. Now, just so everybody knows, I mean, there are so many implications to what happened with Hurricane Katrina and what's gone on over the last year or so, but, I mean, that's one of the greatest food repositories of food culture in America, and you guys were hit pretty hard by this hurricane, and so how did your leadership role, how did you take such a leadership role immediately after the storm hit?
Well, I have several grassroots organizations I'm very involved with in New Orleans, including the Crescent City Farmers Market. And I was back a year ago today. I was back in my house in New Orleans, although we'd had 18 inches of water in the basement. And so I sort of became the face of the farmers market here, contacting vendors, assessing their damages, finding out who had food possibly to sell and who needed the most help. It was our fishermen, our shrimpers and seafood folks that were really devastated with boats sitting on the bottom of bayous and that sort of thing. And so it was largely through that beginning that I began to identify what really needed to be done to save and preserve our food culture.
Now, you had before the storm been working on saving and preserving the food culture of New Orleans and of Louisiana. I mean, Food and Wine magazine said of you, she may wear ceramic red beans in her ears and make finger puppets out of crawfish, but her class is certainly no joke. So you've been teaching classes and making sure to preserve this food history, this very important part of our American food history, for a long time, even before the storm, right?
Well, you know, I was actually doing it at about the same... I began the work of trying to preserve New Orleans food culture before I ever knew Carlo Petrini. It took the founder of Slow Food and I almost 10 years before our paths finally crossed.
Mm-hmm.
When he was beginning Slow Food because of the opening of the McDonald's in Italy, I had realized that one of our dishes, the calà, something more important than the beignet, was almost gone from people's minds and memories, and I set out to save it. And I'll tell you, 10 years later, when I discovered that there was an international organization out there doing like work and ready to help me,
yeah.
Well, that was a huge, huge moment in my life.
Well, I think that also, though, that some people really have, I don't want to say forgotten, but it's lessened in their minds. You know, we just saw the Superdome reopen. To our minds as restaurant people, you know, Commander's Palace reopening is almost as big a thing. You know,
Sunday.
I know it's reopening. It's reopening this weekend, and so that's almost as big an occasion that the restaurant scene is returning to New Orleans.
Oh yes, and Bricados. I mean, one of the most wonderful things, because you see, the Slow Food folks. I did this only because I have the most amazing group of food friends who stand behind us and help us. And when they started raising money for us, we started immediately putting that money into the hands of food producers who could get producing again. And just last Saturday, Bricadas, a 100-year-old Italian business here in New Orleans that had been making traditional cookies, gelatos, and ice creams and had 5 feet of water in their business, just after celebrating their centennial last year, so they're really 101, but most of us can't count last year.
Well, if they're off a year, it's right, they're 100.
Yeah, so they reopened last Saturday. There were 200 people
awesome.
In line when they opened up their doors. It was the most beautiful thing I have ever seen. And also, the slow food money sent from everybody all over even helped to get the Roman candy man back on the streets with his mule-drawn cart.
Oh, that's great.
You know, if people don't realize, I think most of the listeners of our show do realize how important our food heritage is and how, you know, modern corporate stuff out of a box has nothing to do with our heritage. And but especially with a lot of the Louisiana dishes, if we lose the people that are doing this, it's gone. You know, it becomes extinct and the traditions go away. And you work
exactly.
to have that not happen. Tell us about rice challah.
Challah is a dish that actually came from Africa in the hearts and minds of the enslaved rice-growing peoples. And they even still, in Africa, call it challah, so it kept its name. And it was a street-vending tradition. The women, it's a rice cake, and the women would go through the streets of the French Quarter, and they would call out, challah, challah, belle challah to show, madame, belle challah to show. And you would buy these from the challah vendor. But they were on the streets until about World War II, and then they disappeared. So if you knew about the challah, it was a family tradition. And about the time that Carlo was beginning slow food, I was serving challah at an event, and a gentleman in his late 70s said to me, "Lady, can you tell me how you made these?" And I looked at the man, and he had tears in his eyes.
Oh,
he said, "My
beautiful.
Mama used to make these for me all the time when I was a little boy.
That's
and
beautiful.
I'd forgotten that until just now."
That's beautiful. And, you know, preserving that stuff is so important, and we salute you and the work that you do. And if you're out there and you care about this stuff, Slow Food is a great organization to get involved with. You can go to slowfood.org. There's always a link to them up on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. And on October 5th, Slow Food USA will host its second annual gala, Fertile Ground, celebrating our food community, a gala event. It's $250 a person, but the proceeds go to benefit Slow Food, and Carlo Petrini, the founder of Slow Food International, will present you, Poppy, with the leadership award.
And that's going to be that's going to be in New York City.
It's going to be in the Meatpacking District at Industrious Super Studio. We'll have the website up on our address. You can email Gina@slowfoodusa.org. That's Gina@slowfoodusa.org. Or you can call 718-643-3407. That's 718-643-3407. We'll put all that information up on our website. But, you know, it should be a hell of a party going out there.
Well, I hope you guys will be joining us.
We're going to try and make it. You know, this whole running two restaurants and a radio show at the same time thing, really, we have bitten off more than we can chew. We're chewing all the time.
And we're big eaters.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you also, I mean, you've put a lot of stuff out there and kept a lot of stuff alive that otherwise would have fallen by the wayside, and you deserve a lot of kudos for that. So, well, the work that you do is really tremendous. I want to thank you for coming on the show. You've been great.
Thanks, Poppy.
Thank you. Nice to meet you all. Bye-bye.
Take care. Coming up, we'll be talking with one of the top sommeliers in America. Paul Roberts is the sommelier for all of Thomas Keller's properties, the French Laundry, Bouchon, Percé, and we're going to be talking with him, surprisingly, not about wine, but about soda and soft drinks. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Okay, Alex, that out was really sloppy for me, so I'm going to record another out and just put my out in instead of I was going to go somewhere like, you put a lot of stuff in the, I'm going to forget that I said that.
That whole last sentence.
And then save her end where she says goodbye and just drop her in at the end. I'll say something like, well, the work that you do is really tremendous. I want to thank you for coming on the show. You've been great. And there we go. End of the show. Something like that. See,
you still have to do, it's 8:55. You didn't do that. Or it's, time is, WCTC. The time is
and then at the end, I'm going to say, you're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. And if that's short on time, Alex, we can just stick in the part where I'll say, Coming up, we'll be talking with one of the top sommeliers in America. Paul Roberts is the sommelier for all of Thomas Keller's properties, the French Laundry, Bouchon, Percée, and we're going to be talking with him, surprisingly, not about wine, but about soda and soft drinks. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. One final instruction. Alex, do me a favor. Pick some other 9 minutes from some obscure show and put it in the folder, put it in this the Paul Roberts folder, and mark that first 9 minutes when you save it as timely, because it's talking about an event that's going to be over if we ever want to do it as a rerun. And pick some other 9 minutes from some other show that's appropriate and put in Paul Roberts' first segment rerun, so we know to use that one for the rerun. Okay? Thanks. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Our guest today is Paul Roberts. Paul is the director of wine and beverages for all of the Thomas Keller properties, including the French Laundry in Bouchon in California, Percée in New York, and Bouchon Las Vegas. He oversees a staff of 14 full-time sommeliers. He himself is a master sommelier, and he joins us today to talk about his experience running one of the most well-regarded, high-profile beverage programs in the nation.
Hey, Paul, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
We've eaten at both of your places in California and in Percée a number of times, and we know a few people who work for you, and we absolutely love your organization.
Oh, terrific. That's very nice to hear.
And I, you know, those who listen to the show know that I just don't, you know, blow smoke on everybody who comes on the show. I actually sometimes criticize people on the show, but I love everything you do.
Well, there's a few things that we do that I don't know if you'd love. We try to do our best.
Those I don't know about, and I'd like you to keep
exactly.
It that way. You know,
mum's the word on that.
Well, here's the deal. You run one of the truly top-shelf wine and spirits programs in the nation, so our listeners might be surprised to hear that I'm dying to talk to you about your non-alcoholic beverage program. I mean, I think it's exciting stuff. Can you talk to us about what you're doing, sort of sans liquor?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, the kind of onus or the history behind it is right at about 3 years ago, there was one day at a Sunday lunch at the French Laundry before we'd even opened up Percée or Bouchon Las Vegas. There was a famous restaurant critic named David Shaw that, unfortunately, he's passed away, but he wrote for the LA Times for years. David was super knowledgeable about food and wine, and he came in from a trip that he was on with his wife and his 12-year-old son, Lucas. And David said, okay, Paul, Thomas is going to cook. I want you to do all the wines, blow it out, have a great time, show us the world of wine and whatever you want to do. It's like, great. And all of a sudden I turn and look over at Lucas, and Lucas is telling me about some of the great restaurants he's eaten in, you know, all of the great experiences he's had, and all that we have to offer him is still or sparkling water.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, this is something where not only if you're kind of possibly young, but also maybe for health reasons, you're pregnant, for you know, medication reasons you can't drink, or maybe you just don't like the taste of wine or of alcohol, we need to offer something for these people.
Right. Sir, can I get you a cup of coffee with your steak?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So kind of on the fly, I put together as best I could a little kind of pairing for Lucas. And then a couple weeks later, David Shaw called me and said, Paul, that was great. And he really encouraged me to kind of take it to the next level. So over the last kind of course of the 3 years, we've constantly been trying to add to it because we realize that there's a huge market for people out there that maybe, for like I said, whatever reason, they don't like wine, they don't like spirits, and they want to have something when it comes to great food, some liquid refreshment that can make the food taste good.
Well, traditionally what we've done, and when we're talking about those types of products, it's some kind of soda, which is a corn syrup-laden, sticky sweet thing that kind of cloys on your palate and probably doesn't marry with most of the types of foods that we're talking about that you would serve in your place or we would serve in our place.
Exactly. And what we've even tried to do is that we still have a real core essence of a lot of our non-alcoholic beverage programs are sodas. But when we're looking for sodas, instead of corn syrup, we're looking for cane syrup-based drinks because it's not quite as aggressive, it's not quite as cloying, it's a little more almost refreshing quality to it. So if we go out and look for a soda, that's one of the first questions I ask. And I said, what's the base? Is it corn syrup or is it cane syrup?
Do you know what's funny? We put together a cocktail. We just opened our second restaurant recently. And in our first restaurant, we didn't have a very aggressive cocktail program because we started with a 50-seat restaurant and a 20-stool bar. And now it's a 125-seat restaurant, and it's still that 20-stool bar. So it's hard to produce real cocktails there. But we built the second restaurant with cocktails in mind. And in putting our cocktail program together, we will use juices and sodas, and we do a lot of stuff we squeeze fresh, but, you know, sometimes you want to use soda. And I found that any time we used a commercial soda in a cocktail, Anything that was made with fructose, even if you put in a splash of it, just ruined the cocktail.
High fructose corn syrup.
High fructose corn syrup. Do you find that's the case, that you
absolutely
avoid it like the plague?
It is. It's aggressive to the point of being nasty.
Yeah, and it's like a little drop of it will just will throw it off, and it makes everything taste fake.
Yeah, it makes it taste fake, and it, like you said, it has that cloying sweetness. Sometimes I almost get like that saccharine flavor to it. So you have to make sure that whenever people are using any type of form of sodas in cocktails or even just to drink, that it's really that it's cane syrup based. And I'm absolutely convinced that the more that we've kind of experimented with this is that what happens is you've heard for years that people that drink a lot of sodas have cavities. And I'm convinced that it's because the corn syrup is actually a stickier substance, and it literally sticks to your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
But it also then will destroy or really kind of be overly aggressive in so many other places that you may put it, if you're trying to blend it with a spirit or anything else.
It's exacerbated when you blend it with a spirit, I think.
Yeah.
We're talking about all of our ingredient-driven restaurants, okay? Certainly Per Se and French Laundry, we'll talk about those two. Our ingredient-driven restaurants, you would never think about using an inferior ingredient in your food. And yet I find some very, very top-end restaurants are totally open to using inferior ingredients in their cocktails.
I just think that many times certain people may look at cocktails as not as important.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, yeah, it's a cocktail. It's not that big of a deal. Or, oh, those people drinking cocktails, they're not as important to us. And I say that, they're guests in our restaurant, and they're spending their hard-earned money with us, and we need to do our best on a beverage side to make sure that they're getting the best that we can go out and find.
And even from a business perspective, some people start with a 9 or 10 or $12 cocktail and then have a $400 bottle of wine. So.
Oh, absolutely. That happens all the time. And we've really seen that. We've really seen it in Per Se and in Bouchon Las Vegas more so than in our other restaurants. I mean, the French Laundry, it cannot serve spirits because of its kind of location close to a church and a school. Bouchon-Yonville, we always had a really good spirit program, but because it was in the middle of the wine country, wine was a central focus.
Paul, we're going to pick this up in just a moment. Our guest is Paul Roberts. He's the director of wine and beverages for all of Thomas Keller's restaurants, one of the most highly regarded wine programs in the country. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Kathleen Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick. And its mission? To live up to the standards set by Kathleen Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standard set by Kathleen Lombardi. You see, Kathleen Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or KatherineLombardi.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Kathleen Lombardi. Our guest today is Paul Roberts. He's the director of wine and beverages for all of Thomas Keller's property, the French Laundry, Bouchon, Per Se. Paul, we were talking before about cocktails, but I want to hearken back to non-alcoholic beverages before. Now, we found that when we were doing our cocktail program where sodas predominate in a lot of the old recipes that we try to do, that, ginger ale today, well, it doesn't have any ginger in it, and it has high fructose corn syrup in it, most of the commercial ginger ale. So we made our own. You do a similar kind of thing. You go in and sort of make your own stuff. What drives you, and how similar is that to creating a dish when you create a beverage?
Very similar. I think you're looking at the same components you would look in terms of making a great piece of meat or fish or soup or whatever. We look in terms of finding great ingredients and putting it together in little different ways. It's also so much of what Thomas is known for is kind of his reinterpretation of a classic.
So give me an example of something that you do that you can tell our listeners about.
Probably the most one that we've gotten the kind of most acclaim for and the most attention for is making of our own tonic. And we do this we started this in Per Se in New York. We have a really great bartender there who had found some old bartending texts and basically came up with an idea of how we could make our own tonic. So we got on the web and, Googled quinine, and all of a sudden we were on a website that sells you pharmaceutical grade quinine. So we ordered it in, and it comes in, and it looks like a brick. And, you know, of course, one person said it looks like a brick of heroin. Well, I have no idea what that looks like, so I'm just going to ignore that and move forward.
But now, if you ever see heroin, you'll know what it looks like.
Exactly. It's like, is that quinine?
But you'll try and make yourself a gin and heroin.
but there's almost no tonic in the world now being made with quinine.
Exactly. And most of the stuff that still is, it's been bleached, so it's commercially viable. Mm-hmm. Because real quinine, when you actually look at it, you know, it's the scrapings from the bark of a tree. So it's actually brown. So when you get our tonic, like we serve it per se, it is not your crystal clear kind of concoction that most people are used to. It actually has almost this ruddy kind of brownish color. But when you put it with certain gins or many other flavors, it has this wonderful texture to it and also this incredible perfume, but it's not bitter on the finish.
That's a gin. You can go to Per Se in New York, and you can have a gin and tonic that tastes good and helps you fight malaria.
Our guest
is Paul Roberts. He's the director of wine and beverages for all the Thomas Keller properties, and we'll be talking more with him just after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Paul Roberts is the director of wine and beverages for the French Laundry, Bouchon, Per Se, all of Thomas Keller's properties. He oversees a staff of 14 full-time sommeliers. He himself is a master sommelier, and we're talking today about his experiences running one of the best beverage programs in the country and one of the most high-profile restaurants in the country for one of the most high-profile chefs in the country. And I think what's fascinating and what you out there have emailed us about occasionally is they take a great deal of care in coming up with non-alcoholic beverages. We talked before the news about one of the things to avoid if you're using a soda that you purchase or any ingredient that you purchase or grenadine that you purchase is to look for something that does not contain high fructose corn syrup. Literally one drop of that and it'll mess you up.
And it's going to be hard to do. It's going to be hard to find those things.
Like at Stage Left, we make our own grenadine from pomegranates because we couldn't find one that we thought worked. But one of the things that we found was interesting, we make our own ginger ale, we make our own grenadine from pomegranates. I was amazed. We then made a Shirley Temple. You know, I'd done the whole cocktail program, and then a kid was in and ordered a Shirley Temple. And I was like, oh, I don't have any ginger ale. We'll make them with the real ginger ale and the grenadine. And it was a Shirley Temple. I drank one myself. I felt ridiculous. I'm a 40-year-old guy drinking a Shirley Temple at the bar. But you know, you look back and you're like, oh, that's what this drink was really supposed to be.
Right.
So tell us and tell the people that are listening, because we've been talking conceptually, tell them the kinds of drinks that you can put together that are interesting that would pair with some of the dishes that you as a sommelier, if someone said, listen, I don't want to drink, I'm an adult, I don't want to drink, or my kid doesn't want to drink, what would you make them?
I think there's so many different ways that you can go. I mean, we also do a lot with teas and fusions. There's even a new thing that we're working with. There's a perfumer in Berkeley in California that she's come up with these oils and these hydrosols that we're now going to start working with. So you could take a base water and all of a sudden add in a flavor of chamomile or lime or passion fruit or cucumber
lavender,
or whatever,
yeah,
to really make it work with the individual dish. But I think I try to work with all the sommeliers and say, guys, when you're doing a non-alcoholic beverage pairing for a guest, it's very much the same way that you should look at wine. It doesn't have to be any different. You're looking at, again, the weight of the dish versus the weight of the beverage you need to put with it. And many times just match flavor with flavor. So,
well, give me some examples of some drinks that you serve that, you know, that you create to serve with your food.
Well, even some that we don't create. I mean, one real classic one is that certain times of the year we'll do, foie gras is a real kind of central component of so many of Thomas's menus, especially if you sear foie gras and then you have something that maybe possibly has the element of a little sweetness to it, especially if you have cherries or any kind of root flavors or earthiness, try it with a really fantastic artisanal root beer that has lots of sarsaparilla in it. And you think foie gras and root beer, but it actually can work, because what happens is the real creaminess and the CO2 of the root beer helps to cleanse your palate and kind of move the fat along your palate, and then a lot of those earthy flavors that you'll pick up. So it can be a really great match, and it's also, you don't have to have the big cloying sweetness like many people associate, you know, foie gras and sauternes. That's usually, in our opinion, not the best match. So always make sure that when you are looking for that root beer or that soda, that, again, like we've talked about, it's corn syrup-based. Sugar-based, not corn syrup-based.
And just for those who are listening in the Northeast, and I think it's available pretty in most markets nationally, Boylan's soda and Boylan's root beer is one of those root beers that is sugar-based. And if you want to get really geeky and go for one of the highest-end root beers in the country, you can go for Sprecher Brewing Company root beer. They're a beer brewer in Wisconsin. You can find them online. I'll put the website up. Well, I don't remember what it is, but I'll put it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com, and you can get, you know, root beer that's made with the same quality of beer, and this stuff is more likely to match well with food. Mm-hmm. You know,
there are even other things that I think restaurant owners, and there are a lot of restaurant people who listen to the show, but restaurant owners can do, and you can do in your own home. There are products you can buy that are already made. I mean, there are wineries in California, there are cider places in France that will provide for you some really high quality non-alcoholic ciders.
You guys use Navarro Vineyards, I've read. Is that correct for their grape juice?
Navarro does a really extraordinary job with their Gewürztraminer and their Pinot Noir grape juice. Mm-hmm. And it's even something what I'm trying to do right now with, you know, Harvest 06 is find a couple people that will even make us grape juices in different flavors. You know, I'd love to have a full spectrum. You know, we have Cabernet. So whenever somebody comes in and, okay, here's a dish that we would traditionally serve, you know, a Bordeaux or a Napa Valley Cabernet, but you're going to have a non-alcoholic grain, well, I've got a juice that's Cabernet flavored that can work.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's very important, and I think it's interesting how we deal with our kids in this country differently than they do in other countries. And in most places when Mark and I travel, or certainly in you know, Mark's home when we were younger, you would take a kid who was dining with you, and you'd have some, you know, heavily watered down wine. So it's not about the alcohol effect of the wine, but it's teaching kids to look at flavors and how things work together and how to enjoy things as a meal. I think that's got to have a salutary effect on kids, you know, because the way we work in this country is you can't have anything until you're 21, and then you drink your face off for 4 years, and the object is to get as much alcohol in your system as possible, sadly for many kids. And I think that, you know, teaching kids about putting beverages as flavors together with food, I think that's healthy, don't you?
Absolutely, and it needs to really, I think, be done more and more. And it's not that, okay, here's your, you know, here, Timmy, here's your little dinner tonight, you're going to have a Coca-Cola. I mean, I think that's also something that people need to move beyond that, that it's not just milk, water, and Coca-Cola. There's so many different flavors out there, and the earlier you can expose kids to it, definitely that, you know, they don't reach college and all of a sudden they try to pickle themselves in 4 years, which happens to, you know, a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
myself included.
Yeah.
I was just about to say, or 5 years.
I have to say.
Right, or 5 years, me too.
I have to say. We're 40. Some of our friends are still in their junior year. But I think that we had a healthier view on alcohol when we were in college, and some of our friends who used to drink just as much cheap beer as possible, and which is not to say that Mark didn't, and I didn't see some excesses in our college years, but, you know, I worked in a supermarket, Mark worked in a restaurant, and I used to come back to the dorm with a hunk of provolone and a couple of good beers at the end of the night, and, you know, you're drinking good beer, you're eating good food, you drink more slowly, and we were drinking to appreciate what it was that we had, and I think that if you appreciate good food, that's healthy.
Yeah, you don't do funnels with Chimay.
Right, exactly. I mean, it becomes about quality, not quantity. I mean, one of the worst things that I see is, you know, when you see these kids and they have the big gulp, that, you know, it's 64 ounces of pure just sugar.
Yep.
And it's one of the, and then they're going to go and they're going to have whatever meal it is, and that's what they're using to wash it down. And I don't think that it, you know, it doesn't help to stimulate your appetite. It doesn't help you to do digest or anything at all. So, I mean, I think it would even be better if, you know, just give your kids lemonade or something, or water squeezed with lemon or lime in it. So all of a sudden there is some acidity, which is going to help, you know, to digest your food. I mean, that's why we're really, like I was saying earlier, with these kind of oils and these hydrosols, we're really interested in that, because it can still, we just use a base of, you know, a really great bottled water, even just really pure tap water, and you can add all these flavors on. And this is something that somebody could take at home, and they say, I really love the flavor of passion fruit. So it's all of a sudden, you know, here's a great glass of water and put some passion fruit flavor and a little squeeze of lime in it, and all of a sudden you have this incredibly perfumed, exciting, kind of mouthwatering glass of water.
And it's not artificial. And
it's not artificial.
One of the things that I like about that's so important in cocktails, and it's so important in wine, and to make non-alcoholic, because we do have a lot of restaurant operators and bartenders who listen to the show, to make these non-alcoholic drinks, you need work like a cocktail and be worth paying for and to enhance a guest's evening. You've got to put as much effort into creating the cocktail and into presenting the cocktail. So, I mean, how important is glassware to you in these non-alcoholic cocktails?
Oh, glassware is huge. I mean, I always say that glassware is one of those things that if some guest is coming in and, you know, maybe it's a four-top and two of them are drinking, you know, some very expensive wine, you don't want to have the other two that are maybe doing a non-alcoholic pairing or, you know, a non-alcoholic cocktail. You don't just want to put it in your, you know, standard water
Mason
glass.
Mason jar.
You know, like, here you go. You know, you're not as important to us. So many times when we'll do, you know, we'll make these drinks, it's going to be in, you know, beautiful crystal glassware because it's all about the experience. And if you can put something in, you know, a great glass and it can really enhance the experience, go for it.
I totally agree, and I think presentation is something to really worry about, as well as you should craft your non-alcoholic cocktails with the same amount of care with which you craft your alcoholic cocktails. And one of the things that you need to realize is that, you know, in any group of 10 people, that one person who doesn't drink, if you become the one place in town where that person's really happy, that person's going to try and steer that 10-top to your restaurant every single time so everybody can be happy.
Oh, every single time. I mean, the number of guests, which we've now seen have become repeat guests at a number of our restaurants, because of that reason is, you know, you can definitely track it. It is one of those things that they say, wow, because how they look at it is they say, if this restaurant, these people are putting the same effort in making me this non-alcoholic drink, think about what they're doing with the food.
Absolutely.
Think about that all of a sudden they're so thoughtful that everything that they are trying to put on the plate and on the table, they've really thought about it. It's not like they're just throwing
we'll
it out.
We'll come back. We'll be talking more with Paul Roberts, Director of Wine and Beverages for all of Thomas Keller's properties in New York and California and Las Vegas in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply Company is the oldest dealership in New Jersey. They've been equipping and supplying restaurants since 1932, and they know that to make great food, you need great equipment. You need equipment that doesn't break down, and you can't pay too much for it. Whether you need an emergency replacement or a wholesale kitchen renovation, Economy's knowledge, experience, and integrity are indispensable. Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply is a recognized dealer for all major brands, and they specialize in custom fabrication and ventilation. At Economy, they've got all the tools you need to get the job done, all in one place, all priced right, and delivered to your door. Economy is the only dealer in New Jersey that's been approved for on-site demonstrations of the Rational Combi Oven. The Rational Combi Oven is an innovative combination of convection and adjustable steam oven. It's a powerful and versatile tool in your kitchen's arsenal. They also supply competitively priced paper products and all the non-food supplies every restaurant needs. You can visit the Economy Demo Kitchen on Broad Street in Clifton, New Jersey. You can also visit economysupply.com, then call them at 973-279-5500. That's 973-279-5500. Hey everybody, welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest is Paul Roberts, Director of Wine and Beverages for all of Thomas Keller's restaurants, the French Laundry, Bouchon, Per Se. We're talking with one of the best sommeliers in America about not serving wine. We're talking about how great restaurants are really putting as much care into non-alcoholic beverages, and you can go get a tasting menu paired with non-alcoholic beverages that's exciting. And you know, I think on the top end, the cutting edge restaurants are doing this.
Well, I think it's the same movement that we had 10 or 15 years ago in the vegetarian sector for exactly
right.
The same reason. You know, you have one person who's a vegetarian. You make that person extremely happy. They're going to make their other nine friends come to your restaurant.
Sure, because it only takes one no vote to nix a place out of it. I mean, is that part of the idea, to get the one no vote in the large party?
It's that's part of it, but it's also that we have all these people that are coming to our restaurant, and I still remember very clearly when my sister was pregnant with twins, and she loves wine. I mean, and it was one of those things that I watched her, and she's like, you know, I'm eating these meals, and she actually came to one of the opening parties for Per Se, and you know, she was, you know, 6 months pregnant, and it was again one of those things that I said, you know, we need to make sure that whether it's one person in the group or, you know, all the people in the group, that no matter what the guest is coming into this restaurant for, that we can provide them a beverage experience which is equal to what we're doing with the food.
You know, I think another interesting point when I think about pairing or teaching our sommelier teaching our captains how to pair non-alcoholic beverages with food. One of the frames of reference, one of the sort of things on which the first hooks on which we hang our hat when teaching young people how to pair wine and food is we say, you know, look at the cultural frame of reference with beer or wine. So like look when you look at pairing Loire Valley wines with food, well, you think, well, what do they serve in Loire Valley? What's traditional? So you think, right. You know, Sancerre oysters, fish. You think Rhone Valley game because that's what they eat there.
Right.
We don't have those sort of cultural benchmarks for non-alcoholic beverages,
well,
do
Coca-Cola
we?
And pizza.
Or beer. or Coca-Cola and cheeseburger. But are there cultural references for things like that? And do you miss them when trying to explain to people how you're putting their tasting menus together?
I don't know if there's so much for us cultural references, but it's just looking at kind of what flavors. So we always say, okay, here's a dish. Tell me what wine you would serve with the dish. And then the sommelier say, okay, we'd serve these three wines. They said, okay, now tell me the flavors of those three wines. And they basically come at the basic down and they say, okay, I want three or four words of how you describe that. You know, light, medium, full, high acid, low, medium acid, low acid. Flavors, is it cherries, is it citrus, whatever. Say, okay, use that now as your base to go find a non-alcoholic beverage, whether it's a soda, it's something you create, it's an infusion, it's a tea. So we start with the cultural reference of how it could work with wine, because with the sommeliers, that's really what they know the best. And then you basically just strip it down from there and then distill it down to what is the core flavors and tastes that we need to look for. And then that's the direction that leads us to whatever beverage that we might do with it. I don't know if there's so much cultural reference. It's also, you know, I don't think there's a lot of people that would ever think, you know, foie gras and root beer or lobster and you know, Gewürztraminer or grape juice. So I think more it just comes about what is going to taste good.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, we've talked about root beer and we've talked about sodas. And the hallmark of some of these great sodas and a lot of the drinks that we're talking about is that they're not as sweet. Not only do they use sugar instead of corn syrup, but they're not. These drinks don't have to be sweet, and I think that we think if it's a soft drink, meaning it's a non-alcoholic drink, that it has to have sweetness to it. But, do you tend to try and go for more dry and
absolutely
savory beverages?
Yeah, I mean, the original soda that we used pretty much from day one was a company called Gus. Gus stands for Grown Up Sodas.
Right, yeah.
And it was a guy who was an executive with PepsiCo, and he said, you know, I want to produce something that's not quite as sweet. So Steve Hirsch and his wife found some of these organic juices in California and then made them in a very dry style. There's a new company which is just out from, I think it's from Seattle. I've just received samples of it. I've tried a couple of their products, but it's called Dry Soda. And they have all these different flavors. You know, there's one that I have right now. There's lemongrass. There's, you know, Meyer lemon. There's passion fruit. But, well, we're definitely looking more for the drier thing because it's also not going to leave, a big kind of sweet element on your palate. It also, what they're doing is they're actually adding some natural acidity to it, whether it's from a juice that is there or whatever acid component it is. So it makes it a little more refreshing.
Well, what's the cheap trick? I mean, the cheap trick that every soda company, every mainstream soda company is doing, and frankly, every packaged processed food they're doing that you taste. Well, we'll pump up the sugar, and we can take out more pump up the corn syrup, I should say, and we'll take out some of the other ingredients, and we'll just make it really, really sweet, and you won't notice the flaws in the rest of our product.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the soda world is very much like the wine world, is that, you know, sometimes the wine world, you can cover up a lot of flaws with oak or a lot of flaws mm-hmm. with alcohol. The sodas
or
companies,
sugar.
Or sugar. And the soda companies are doing exactly the same, is they're trying to say, if we can make it the most rich, the most full-bodied, the most kind of cloying, then you won't notice that, you know, it really tastes like chemicals.
Hey, Paul, I want to thank you for joining us on The Restaurant Guys today. It's been a pleasure to talk with one of the best sommeliers in the world about not serving people wine in restaurants.
Hey, Paul, maybe we could have you back on the show and talk about wine.
That would be great. Yeah, I always laugh now. I studied all those years to become a master sommelier, and now my wife calls me the soda sommelier.
That's Paul Roberts. He's director of wine and beverages for all of Thomas Keller's properties. He's one of the top sommeliers in the country. And it just goes to show you that when you're at a great restaurant, you care about every single part of the meal. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, stage left, Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. I love talking about putting together non-alcoholic beverages to go with your dinner, as we just did with one of the best sommeliers in the country.
I was just about to say, one of the things that I feel really badly about is
we
literally had one of the best sommeliers in the country.
Didn't talk about wine.
And didn't talk to him about wine for 10 seconds.
Hey, man, he's blazing new trails, though, and I think if you're a restaurateur out there and if you have a not, if you have a BYO place out there,
mm-hmm.
you're a fool if you don't jump on this bandwagon.
And also, just every single restaurant owner in America, I want to tell you this, and I want to tell you people who are at home as well. Sugar is obviously, you know, sugar gets kind of a bad rap, but high fructose corn syrup is so bad. I mean, I remember back when we were in college, you could still buy Coca-Cola that had sugar in it if it was bottled in Atlanta. Those little glass bottles. People used to wonder why those little glass bottles tasted better. They tasted better because they were made with sugar instead of corn syrup.
I just came back from Europe where they don't allow high fructose corn syrup, and I'm telling you that the Coke there tastes. I had like four or five Cokes, and I was with a friend of mine who we were riding motorcycles and going to restaurants in mm-hmm. all throughout Austria. A guy named Peter Schleimer, who is the editor in chief of Vinaria and Vinaria Gourmet, the most important wine magazine in all of Austria, and I kept stopping by the side of the road in motorcycles and getting a Coke. He's like, what's with the Coke, American boy? I'm like, you don't understand. European Coke is so much better than American Coke because it has sugar and not high fructose corn syrup. That's really something to avoid.
But I remember that as a kid, Coke tastes better than it does now, and it's not because new Coke went to old Coke and classic Coke and all that
stuff.
Because
sugar went to corn syrup.
Sugar went to corn syrup and made it taste worse.
I got a secret weapon for you out there. I don't know if it's going to be hard to find, but actually you can email us at restaurantguysradio.com. We'll send you some. It's like $15 a bottle or $18 a bottle. It's elderflower syrup.
Mm-hmm.
It's an Austrian product. In German, it's Hallerblüten syrup. But elderflower syrup is traditional in Austria, and you can put it in soda, you can put it in wine, you can use it as an ingredient. And I always use that as my secret ingredient when making especially non-alcoholic drinks.
Ready for a great combination? I'll give you one that just came off the top of my head. Elderflower syrup, a little bit of club soda in it. Next time you do like a butter poached lobster, it'll be awesome.
Absolutely perfect. Well, I hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.